I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So?
That's not great.
We still can't believe we're actually here. We're still waiting for one of them to come on and go, come on, get off. But anyway, we'll do it for as long as we can before we get caught. I'm Lucy from Dumpty Dum. Thank you so much for coming. How many people here are Dumpty Dum people and how many are archers? Who is a Dumpty Dum person? Lots of people, good. And the rest of you are Archers listeners. Did you do the mailbox tour and everything yesterday? Some of you, great. It was good, wasn't it? They told us all how fab it was. Right. We have some people coming up from the audience, which I think has been sorted out, how you're going to get up and everything. And we have with us some very special guests for you. We're also going to do a live Dumpty Dum, so we're just going to have a little bit of a sing of the theme tune to warm our voices and obviously to provide us with a Dumpty Dum for months to come when we haven't got one. So that's the plan. What was I going to say? So I hope you're all in good voice, largely. So shall we do a quick ah? Everyone have a bit of a sing. Very good. Excellent. Yes, I don't. They haven't told us to do any fire warnings or anything, so I presume if there's a fire, run out. That's it. Don't stand here. Run out. Probably that way. Derek Fletcher was due to be here. He does send his apologies. There was a bit of an issue with getting his unfeasibly large apparatus on the train, and then when he saw, he felt overshadowed by the organ. So that he gave up. I think it's about time now that we bring out our lovely guests to see you. Have we got somebody here who's come from Boston? Is that right? A lady who's come from a very... Who is it? You came from Michigan? For this? Yes. Nothing else? Did you mean to? Is it okay? Well, that's just... fantastic. When they said someone's come from... Because it's not Boston then. Because someone said Boston to me and I thought Boston, Lincolnshire. I thought, that's fine. That's not... Why is everyone telling me that?
No.
Right. I will now... My co-host and podcasting husband is feeling somewhat under the weather today. I shall warn you now. They have offered to supply a Birmingham Symphony Hall bucket, but he's declined. So can we please have a big hand for Mr. Royfield Brown? And next we have the man without whom none of this would be possible because we would have nothing to talk about, Kerry Davis, who writes the article. And lastly, but not leastly, the lady of the tabard, Susan Carter, a.k.a. Charlotte Martin. You can start, Gabriel. Right, we're going to do the Dumpty Dum now. Okay.
So, folks, this is live. And this is all incredibly daunting for me anyway. And it's really nice for me to be back in my hometown. back from America, and also to have my mum and dad in the audience as well. And Dum-de-dum listeners of a certain vintage will know that every now and then when I record, when I'm back home, my mum will come in with a cup of tea, or I'll be berated by my father, so there's always voices off. So it's really nice to see mum and dad in the audience.
Can I just say, Mr. and Mrs. Brown, I wanted you to be in a royal box somewhere so I could come out and do a little bob.
But this is how we always start. Dum-de-dum.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know. Dum-de-dum. I've been asked to, for those of us who've been up for the weekend, want to say a little something to Royfield, who has organised it all. So we do three cheers for Royfield. Hip hip.
Hooray!
Hip hip.
Hooray!
Hip hip.
Hooray!
And now you're all vocally warmed up. It's a proper dum-de-dum with the sheep at the end, which I will conduct you for as well. So. And I know quite a few are singers, so we'll start sort of on a da on there, okay? After four. Three, four.
We'd like to welcome you all to Birmingham Town Hall. It's my hometown and the temporary home of Dum-de-dum, or should that be Brum-de-dum? Now, of course, Dum-de-dum is the show about the reality docudrama that has centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the model prisoner that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the snotty public school boy with a black eye that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Freddie's jail sentence, folks, is you. Now, this week we are honoured to have with us Kerry Davis, one of the fantastic team of writers behind The Archers, and Charlotte Martin, who plays one of our favourite characters, Susan Carter. On this week's episode, we have calls from Andy and Titian. But first, before we get to the good stuff, which is just me talking about some random film that I've seen this week... You have to sit through my podcasting wife's Lucy B. Freeman's week in Ambridge.
I have to say, I feel like a sixth former who's written a rude newsletter and the headmaster's made me read it on stage.
If only I could write like Lucy.
We began the week mourning Norman Stanley Freddy's descent into the slammer. Podge it up! He's got a year, which in Archer's time means he'll either be out next Wednesday or we won't hear a peep from him until 2023. Brian is now worried that the same thing will happen to him. It is very unlikely you will be sent to a Young Offenders Institute, Brian. More like an eventide home. Hootie Jill was being sympathetic over at Brookfield while they waited for David to work out which sock went on which foot before he drove Elizabeth to the prison. Freddie should be okay in a Young Offenders Institute, Hootie said knowledgeably, cutting the lemon drizzle. He needs a nice little job in the Obit shop as long as he don't give it the Billy Big Bollocks and keeps his shiv up his jacksie. Hootie, Ruth! They made the journey up north, no breaks. For some reason, David has a strange aversion to stopping in motorway services. Elizabeth gazed dolefully out of the window. I thought it would look less like a prison, she said. No, that's not it, Elizabeth. That's Sheffield, said David. On the way home, she was hysterical. You won't survive with people like that, she wailed. Elizabeth, he is people like that. No, not criminals. People who say lounge and toilet, she sobbed. My baby. The good news is, Elizabeth finally told Kenton that far from being the poor, exploited little twonk she's convinced everyone he is, Freddie was handing out more pills than Boots the chemist after prom night at Felpersham College. Kenton stopped singing the chorus to Anarchy in the UK for a moment and vaguely considered that Freddie may be partially responsible for... No, it's much easier to just blame the filth. I wonder where Freddie gets his ability to live in a fantasy world from. Anyway, once reason returned to its throne, which always takes a while with Kenton, he then tried to make up with Fallon by describing Auntie Cardboard as a very wise woman. Oh, yes. The woman that gave away her savings to a total stranger in a hacking jacket who told her he was going to ride horses round an imaginary racetrack in Costa Rica. Mind you, by Kenton's standards, she's a sodding genius. Over at the Flower and Produce, Jennifer won everything, from Guess the Weight of Shula Hebden Lloyd to... to Marrow That Looks Most Like Its Owner and the ever-popular What's Carol Toboggan Smoking competition. In a blatant attempt to skew the judging, Clary told Fallon about Nick's harvest pie. It's basically the compost been under some pastry, Fallon. But her mummy's dead. You wouldn't want to upset her with her dead mummy, would you? Yes, said Fallon calmly. Couldn't give her monkeys. But it all worked out all right for the Grundys, as Kira won with a fruity llama. But quite frankly, it's easy to score with a fruity llama, though, particularly if you are another llama. Now, this strange social event Justin's organising and Lyndon's apparently desperate to go to. The VIP guests are Ira Foster Q and Brenda Belcher. Kerry, where are you getting these names from? Are you just chucking Scrabble letters up in the air and writing down whatever lands?
It worked for Shula and Kenton.
Tom and Hannah are reaching Sid and Jolene in the shower scales. We even had... Not like that, Tom, it tickles. But knowing Tommy got stuck trying to get her wellies off, she booty-called him for the third time and he rushed home from work. I'm amazed he's got the strength to get in the polytunnels, never mind out of them. He's sounding more and more tired, which is maybe thinking maybe Hannah's also been shagging Neil on the quiet, which would explain the noises. When Johnny interrupted their lunchtime loving, they decided that rather than just shouting, "We'll be down in a minute, Johnny," Tom and Hannah should stage a row, which became quite unnecessarily vitriolic, largely focused around Hannah leaving her knickers on the radiator. I don't even know why she did that. Have they not got a rotary? We've had some lovely drying days. Anyway, poor Johnny, who is so anti-aggro he should be negotiating Brexit, got very, very flustered. Hannah, Tom, stop being nasty. Them knickers aren't Hannah's, they're mine. Oh, thongs, brilliant. Tony's been practising Guess the Weight of the Cow and got really good at it, but then discovered it wasn't even a category at the Flower and Produce. But he took the opportunity to hand on this superpower to Johnny, who is quietly bricking it about having sole responsibility for the cows. So far, Johnny's only had sole responsibility for some celery. It's not that stressful to look after celery. One night he was convinced he'd left the gate open and celery might have got out, but it was fine. And he's now got quite quick at herding it up the lane to the parlour. Poor old Auntie Cardboard took a tumble. She got a bit damp in the rain coming back from the tea shop and went a bit curly at the edges and fell over herself. Apparently she damaged her pubis, which in dumpty-dum terms is known as doing a Robart, and to the rest of us, falling on her ass. However, she will soon be out of hospital as her only visitors seem to be Kenton and Peggy. So if that is an incentive to get the hell out of there, I don't know what is. Jazza and Alistair did a lot of heavy breathing. Come on, Jazza, don't stop now, we're nearly there. They were running... Bloody hello, they were running. And horrible Hannah came out to give them moral support by legging them over and singing the Chariots of Fire music to the accompaniment of farty noises from under her armpits. She really is a charmer. Do you know, I'm quite looking forward to Hannah's first run-in with Kirsty. She'll be so surprised when she says something snarky and Kirsty just leans forward right in her face and goes, Tom! The end.
You know what, Freeman?
What?
That was so much better than last week. It really was. Last week didn't half go on. You had some jokes in that one. Well done.
It must be amazing to actually hear the laughter, though.
It's terrible, because it might not come. I can imagine them laughing.
It's one of the problems of writing The Archers. You write what you hope is a funny line.
Yeah.
And you
God
never hear
Twitter
them after.
Because
yeah.
Oh, that was it. Yeah,
absolutely. I sometimes come into studio where my scripts are being recorded, just to hear the read-through. Because the actors will sometimes laugh at a line. I mean, they're only doing it so that I write them more lines in the future. But it's great just to get that.
Is he trying to hijack our show?
Yeah. I don't mind. I think we should let him.
My name is Royfield. So I haven't got a script, so I don't know when I'm meant to speak.
When you're spoken to.
Oh, exactly. Now, last week in The Archers, right? What do you reckon? Bearing in mind there's a script writer right next to you now.
It was great.
I wrote this week, tonight, to Friday, so slag the last one.
Okay. Excellent.
Flower and Produce Show. Were you excited?
Yes, leaping, I could not sit still. I think what confused me more, really, was the Tom and Hannah thing, because I genuinely couldn't understand why they keep taking these colossal risks of being caught with... Mm. Their pants down. We heard the zipper again, didn't we?
Well, we heard a lot of zipper action, didn't we? There was a lot of slippage, as they would say in the Archer single social. Little bit of a wry laugh out there.
But you don't know whether it was a zipper on the trousers or a zipper on a cagoule.
No, she said, Tom, pull your trousers up.
Three times in one week.
A cagoule in bed?
Oh, well.
But there was a lot of sex in the Archers this week. It upset me. It upset me. And then there was Alistair and Jazza, wasn't there?
The running?
Yeah.
I know, well, that's quite sweet, I think, that he's sort of encouraging him. And now Alistair, you know, Jazza sort of got him into it, and now Alistair's encouraging him. There is going to be a health crisis, isn't there?
There has to be.
Is there a health crisis?
What are you setting us up for, Kerry?
I can't answer questions about the future.
But we've sat Kerry off the trapdoor.
I can barely answer questions about the past. I certainly can't do the future.
But what is absolutely lovely is we're hearing more of Jazza as a character.
Yes. Yeah. He's got to have a nice woman soon, doesn't he?
And it's not going to be Hannah, is it? Because she ain't nice. Mm. Ooh, what a witch.
And he bought all those flowers. And it's, are we all right now, Hannah? Are we all right now?
Probably just gone from the service station. Probably a fiver, wasn't
it, really? from the green burial garden.
They were Jim's prize-winning blooms, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
He actually nicked them out of the front garden.
Yes.
Outrageous.
So we know that something's going to happen with Jazza, because we've heard loads of him. Someone's going to have a heart attack because they're doing a whole load of health stuff. Freddie. Freddie got a proper slap, didn't he?
Elizabeth's just bonkers though, isn't
is she?
But all that treating him as if, you know, somehow he's been not maltreated in the Young Offenders Institute, but, you know, it's horribly unfair that he's been given a jail sentence. He's just been treated exactly like anybody else that has committed that crime.
I completely understand.
And now she's going to the governor, and you think, my God, how many times do you want him to be beaten up? You know, now he's written to the governor and I don't have to sit with you lot anymore.
But isn't it, it's because he doesn't fit the people, you know, the general profile, perception of what a drug dealer is.
But everybody that first enters prison or a Young Offenders Institute gets beaten up because it's the pack mentality to show you where you are in the thing, isn't it? From my vast experience.
But I did think, I quite liked David taking Elizabeth up there, because you got a real sense of them as a family, actually as siblings. And then there's a whole kind of wider thing, you know, Kenton with his nonsense about, you know, falling out with Fallon.
Yeah.
You got a sense of the Archer, the wider Archer's clan, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that was just a nice thing to, you know, throughout all.
There's going
to
be a massive backlash against Elizabeth now, because she's kind of engendered so much, it's all awful, everyone help me, this is terrible, my poor boy has been victimised. And now people are finding out that actually he was doing it for months, that he endangered Nolitando, he did this, that and the other.
You know Kerry's nodding.
I just focus, watch Kerry's body language.
Keep a right eye on this man here.
She went out on such a limb.
Yeah.
And already, the reason I'm nodding is because it started on Friday with Kenton and David.
Yeah.
You know, and they're suddenly going, look, we still support you, and it's terrible,
but he did do it.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes. But she's done that Elizabeth thing of she's convinced herself that Freddie was blameless because she can't. But then, you know.
But wouldn't any mother?
They would. Yes.
My mother's never forgiven me for listening to The Archers, you know, back in 1984.
He must have been an embarrassment. I'm sorry.
And wedding photos.
On the radio.
On the radio. Which was your favourite, Lucy?
Well, mine was the first. I'll tell you my favourite. It was the one with Kenton with his tie tied around his head, because I could utterly see exactly that. You know, they're playing AC/DC or something. The DJ. And there he is playing air guitar with the. Yep, I've got that completely. You know, look at these people here. They're all intelligent. They've all got imaginations. You only have to give them a few words, and they're painting pictures in their head anyway. Yeah. That's how radio works, Royce.
Thank you for pointing that out. So we end up with Auntie Chris, Auntie Cardboard.
Yeah. Falling over Hilda Ogden.
When they're just going to put her down? When are they going to put her down?
That's a bit harsh.
Well, she had,
who would Peggy live with if they put Auntie Cardboard down?
Waterworks, you know. And now there's this with a blooming hip and whatever. It's like, oh.
It's when Alistair goes to visit, you've got to worry.
It's the kindest thing in the long run.
But the week ended up with Kenton and Fallon making up, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Fallon's just got to get used to this, because if you're going to be the wife of a copper in a small village, you are going to end up knowing all kinds of unsavoury things. And what Auntie Cardboard said was very helpful, I think, about, you know, George Barford saying, oh, you know, he had to do all kinds of things that he didn't want to and didn't, you know, he felt uncomfortable about. But, you know, it's just the job.
It is.
Yes.
Mm. Right, now, before we interview our esteemed guests, or have a chat. Should we have a chat? Should we interview them? What do you reckon? Shall we?
Yeah.
Do we have to?
Yeah. Well, we could just ignore them.
Before we do that, why don't we take a couple of calls?
Yes.
All right, then.
Hello, Cambridge 3962.
First off, it's Andy from Denmark.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. It's Andy from Denmark. Now, I normally call you once every 4 years, but this is the second time I've called you in 6 weeks, so I've gone a bit crazy now. Well, I listen, obviously, to The Archers, along with my parents, and my mum's friend, Rosie, a name check for her, has just predicted that Elizabeth is going to start a relationship with Alistair, which is obviously going to cause a huge rift in the family, and the sisters may never speak again. Now, on another note, I play this game with my dad especially, where we would basically talk about which characters we'd happily push off a cliff and never see again. Now, my top two for the moment. Number one, Ian. I cannot stand Ian. He is a moron and a silly, stupid little man. And, I would happily wipe him out with some kind of disease. I also hate Lillian.
Because she is just a
silly, middle-aged to old age.
I've got a lot right off Andy from Denmark.
Like the Julie Walters character. Don't even get me started on her. Anyways, my mum loves Ian, which, I've got to be honest, is going to possibly cause a rift in our family. Because if she continues with this Ian stance, then we're not going to be able to enjoy Christmas together. Anyway, keep up the good work. Love the podcast. And I'll speak to you in about another 6 weeks with some inane comment. Bye.
How could anybody not like Lillian?
That is such a contrarian.
Absolutely.
Ian is the nicest man.
If I had to say who were our two most popular characters, it could easily be Ian. And it just goes to show, you've only got 5 million listeners, you have 5 million points of view.
Mm. No, you have one person who doesn't like Lillian.
But I think our Andy from Denmark was being deliberately contrarian. Because
what did he say? He said a middle-aged woman like Julie Walters, which is all the reasons why we like her.
We like her, indeed.
National treasure.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right, now, the next caller, I think she's a little bit tiddly, but it's Artisha. I believe she's on the rocker in Madrid or something. Or not.
Okay.
Here she comes.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Hello, buenas noches. Evening. Oh. It's Tisha and Benny here.
And Bernie Mag here.
In Madrid.
In Madrid. Having a nice evening. Slightly tipsy, but full of opinions.
We have a few things to send.
Yes, we do.
So, Freddie. Yeah. We actually do really feel quite sorry for
him. It's a real shame. We're really worried about him.
However, we have watched Prison Break. And we have watched Orange Is the New Black, and we don't want to hear it.
No.
I would have preferred, personally, a lot of, 2,000 Community hours.
That would have been somewhere. Good. That would have been...
He could have packed for Jenny.
Much
better. And Brian.
Yes.
He could fix Tom's sips.
Could have done. Could have done all.
He could help move cows. He could, I don't know, help Emma serve in the shop. All sorts of merriment. He could help... carpet beds, find the bunting. But please no Prison Bake.
And
bake? Prison Bake Off. Oranges in the Black. Very boring.
We had enough with Helen in prison. That was quite enough torture.
Very depressing. Very depressing.
And that was upsetting. And we don't want any more of that kind of upsetting.
No more upsets.
Because it's bound to be awful, isn't it?
Right. Grim. We don't want happy.
No.
We weren't
happy. As my mother used to say.
I'm concerned that she's just the embodiment of Anisha, though. That depresses me.
Yeah, she's Anisha sort of taken one step further, isn't she?
It's not nice. She's not nice to Neil. We don't like that.
Oh, no.
We love Neil.
Generally not nice to anyone, is she?
Nasty.
And Anisha was a bit hard-nosed, but she was horrible.
We have to say au revoir.
Adios. Wrong country. Hasta luego.
Now, how much do you reckon they've been drinking?
I don't know what they're on, but can I ask them?
This is, yes. Thank you, Tishan, in an advanced state of refreshment in Madrid.
Yes.
Lemme, Nick.
Well, for me, it was significant when Hannah had a go at Neil. You just think, you know, this is the nicest person in the village.
Mm.
You know, you can't have a go at our Susan's Neil, can you?
No.
Right. And I said to myself, oh, she's got to be a little bit of a Roman.
Yeah.
So my question to you, Mr. Davis, right, is when you got your big chalkboard, you script writers, and you go, right, we're going to have a new character or a returning character as Hannah is supposed to be, right? Did you absolutely set out for her to be a bit of a bitch?
Not exactly, but it came out of
when you say came out
of the story. We didn't bring her back and think, you know, we're going to bring her back and make her the person that everybody in this room actually hates now. But it just seemed like an interesting story. Because Neil is such a nice guy, and everybody cuts him a lot of slack. Well, what happens if there's someone who isn't a, you know, doesn't cut him such slack? And you know, back when Godfrey Baisley created the show, he came up with this wonderful formula. What you need is you guys probably know this: mother and father figure, young lovers, a comic character, and an irritant. And you do need the grit in the oyster, and Hannah's providing a bit of that at the moment.
So, Charlotte, what's it like to work alongside Brian, who is the nicest man in Ambridge?
Oh, it's an absolute delight. He's a fantastic actor, very experienced. I mean, been working in theatre and television and radio for years. But he's just so generous as an actor. I couldn't wish to play the majority of my scenes with a better person. I know this all sounds a bit gushing, but it really is true. He's a great inspiration to me as well. So I love it. Yeah, it's really good.
And how do you develop that kind of chemistry? Obviously, you've been married on the show for what, 30 plus years now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how has that chemistry been developed, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, the script writers, I've got to say this, haven't I? The script writers help us in writing such fantastic scripts. But I think it's fortuitous, really. I mean, it's just lucky that when you put two actors together, they are able to bond and form a really close relationship. And that's happened with Brian and myself. But I'm sure you will have experience of probably putting two characters together who should have a connection, a bond, and it doesn't quite work. So however good an actor you are, sometimes that can't be breached. You know, you can't develop that. And I think you may have...
Absolutely, yes. Know, I can't instances. Think of any right now, but no, certainly but it happens, you know, you put people together in a sort of beginnings of a relationship, and you hear how it sounds, you know, and you don't commit yourself until you know, particularly to something long term like they're going to get married or whatever, until you know for sure that those actors are going to sound as if they're really connected, a couple.
I actually think it's really interesting for me, Alistair and Shauran and their breakup. there is, I actually believe them more now than when they were together, because they were so vanilla and 2D.
Yeah.
Now, they're real characters, and I believe their relationship. Mm.
Absolutely.
If you look at how they, you know, how they got together, it was under unusual circumstances, mm-hmm. you know, where it was clear that if it hadn't been for the pull of Ambridge for Shula, you know, she probably would have gone to Manchester with Dr. Richard Locke, you know. And so Alistair, he was always number two in that. You know, in that choice. Mm. So there was an element of settling there, and that has bubbled away for a long time, you know, until it finally came out last year.
Do I agree? Well, it was a vanilla relationship, and I could never see where it was going, particularly. And now it is going somewhere at least, but I didn't believe them as a couple. Yeah.
And particularly once Dan had left,
you
know, Dan was a focus for them.
So, Alistair sounds like a new man now.
He does.
He sounds quite fanciable now. All of a sudden, you think, oh, hello. Completely different.
Lavinia certainly thinks that.
Ooh. She couldn't touch now.
So, I know we spoke before, Kerry, about new characters and the fact that I think there's just less than 100 characters, actually, on The Archers.
Actual speaking characters, yeah.
Yeah, speaking characters, yeah. And I could be putting words in your mouth, but I think the impression I got from you is that you thought there should be more reticence as to in terms of putting in new characters, considering that so many established characters just kind of almost have to wander off. Whatever. So,
where are you, Kathy? Yeah.
Good question.
So, what was the point of Anisha? Because you know, there's a big setup there. You know.
Yeah. I'll be absolutely frank. We cast a brilliant actor there who was very busy.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of trouble getting her for Archer's stories.
Well, she kept appearing on Holby City.
Absolutely. And so Anisha she couldn't fulfil the potential that we'd hoped for her. I'll tell you one thing she was never brought in for was to have an affair with Alistair. That was always meant to be a bit of a blind alley. Mm. And indeed, at least we were able to do that. But it was just one of those unfortunate things, you know. If she hadn't been so successful elsewhere, she might still be in The Archers. It's one of those things.
I don't know what that says about the rest of it.
Well, it's interesting. Some actors have, you know, thriving careers outside The Archers, but manage to balance the two.
Yeah.
You know, and Charlotte, as I'm sure everybody or most people here know, has an amazing career outside The Archers, but, you know, you manage to balance the two as well.
Yeah. Maybe, Charlotte, for the listeners and for the audience that don't know, what do you moonlight as? Because obviously, your main profession is...
She moonlights as Susan Carter.
Well, my first and foremost, my love, my first love is acting. That's always what I've wanted to do. And I particularly wanted to go into musical theatre when I first started out, but that never happened. But anyway, secured myself this nice... lovely role in The Archers, which I'm really pleased to be playing. But in between acting, as you know, lots of actors rest. And that gave me an opportunity to develop an interest in psychology. And so I went on in between acting to do a degree in psychology just for a laugh. And that was quite fun. And then I thought, I actually, I quite enjoy this. Why don't I do a PhD? So I did a PhD in psychology and then found myself being offered a job as a senior research fellow in youth mental health. So I work currently at the University of Warwick as a senior research fellow researching youth mental health with a focus on early intervention. Ooh! Imagine going to that unit and then suddenly realising that you're talking to Susan Carter. And you think, oh, God! Well, it's interesting, actually, because I go to various conferences across the world, really, and it's very interesting because we have kind of a conference drink before the conference starts and we're all chatting. And someone who knows what I do often drops this into the conversation, and the looks on people's faces sometimes are... What? and the dynamic of the conversation changes, and then we're not talking about, you know, is it right to medicate people under 40 with medication, but, you know, what's Shula and Alistair going to be doing in the next few years or whatever. So the dynamic changes, but it also uses, I get particular benefit from it breaking down barriers. So as soon as someone knows I'm in the Archers, because it's so well known, it kind of creates an instant kind of link, and barriers are broken down, and you know, the chat begins, and it's very nice. It helps a shoe in all sorts of situations.
It is amazing what it happens when I don't tend to trumpet it, you know, but somebody will say, oh, he writes the Archers, you know, it comes out, you know, and the usual, the next sentence from the person you're talking to is, my mum loves that.
Or how most men say to me, oh, yes, my wife listens to that.
And then you find they know all about the storyline.
Exactly.
I went back... when I spoke to you, Charlotte, last year, mm-hmm. I went back and listened to some old episodes of the 1980s when I think you were fresh into the village.
Yeah.
Your voice in half changed.
Has it?
You were much more clipped back then. Much more.
Okay.
But everybody and it's was. Something which I've said on the podcast before, is you go back and listen to those old episodes, everybody sounded incredibly posh.
But I think that's typical of today's society, isn't it? You know, our language is changing and evolving, and we are becoming looser in our pronunciation. And I think particularly with the BBC, you know, it was... The origins of the BBC was everyone had received pronunciation and it was very clipped. And I think there was probably a legacy of that even in the 80s when I first started. But I also think it's also a hint to the realism that has kind of impacted on drama, both radio and television, that we crave more and more realism in our dramas. And I think... that is reflected in the way the conversations happen, and it's no longer quite tight and kind of, you know, it's much more open and relaxed, and I think that's what's happened in the Archers particularly.
Well, some of the audience went yesterday to the BBC mailbox and did the studio tour, and everybody kind of like came back raving about the ball. So, like, the fact that the ball was literally like one piece of like cardboard, like so big. But I think it really gave people an insight as to how creative the sound staff are, the editors and the sound recorders and stuff are. And it was a real sense of wonder to listen to everybody's stories and then you know, going into the Archer studio. But how was it for you the first time when you walked in?
Yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, I hadn't done any radio. I'd done mainly television, a bit of theatre. And so I auditioned for two other parts, actually, prior to getting Susan, both of which were cast and both of which are no longer in the village, so I was lucky there. But when I first went in to record, my parents had listened to the programme, so I knew about it, but I hadn't listened myself. And it was terrifying, you know, you had to watch for the light, you had to make sure you were standing the right distance from the microphone, you were standing with really, really well-established actors who were, you know, were magicians in terms of radio drama. And also, the hardest thing for me at that point was turning the script without making a noise. So we do this kind of exaggerated thing, and I still do it today. So you have your script there, and when you're turning the page over, you do this. So you'll see actors doing this strange thing, and that happens now. But that, for me, was one of the hardest things, was turning the page and making sure that it didn't rustle.
And along with all of those things, you've got to act as well.
And you've also got to act, yes, I forgot that. Yeah.
One of the things I love about Neil and Susan is the way they completely operate on two speeds.
Yes.
By the time Neil's cleared his throat, Susan's already made the plan, said what they're going to do, alerted him to all the pitfalls, and gone ahead and done it. And Neil's still going in the corner of the kitchen, and she's off.
Yeah, well,
because if they were both the same, it would never
it would
work.
Not work.
But it's such a beautiful
relationship. And I think we've talked about this before, haven't we? That actually, I think that Susan and Neil work and have one of the strongest marriages, I think, in the village, because they are at opposite ends of the spectrum, and it's kind of, I think we said, you know, opposites attract,
yep.
and that works. But I think Susan is a typical woman. You know, she organises, she gets things sorted, she says what's what, and the man obviously just goes, oh, yeah, OK. So I think it reflects those kind of relationships.
And also, I do need to know, for the sake of my own relationship, what do you put in the chilli?
Oh. I couldn't possibly say.
I love the fact the chilli has now become like the code word.
Hasn't it just?
No,
yes. It's chilli night.
So, early 90s, and you've been in the show then for quite some time by the early 90s. Mm. You kind of had your media moment, didn't you, when you were thrown behind bars.
Tell
For the listeners that maybe aren't aware of that story, tell us about the story of why Susan ended up behind bars.
Yeah.
But then tell us about the media furore that surrounded that.
It was an amazing time, actually. So Susan comes from the Horobin family, and the Horobin are renowned for being, you know, the rough element of Ambridge.
They were created so that the Grundys would have someone to look down at.
Yeah. So picture, you know, very downtrodden social housing, cars on the front lawn, bin bags. You get the picture, don't you? And Susan was brought up in this household with how many brothers she got?
Three brothers.
Right, thank you. Yeah. She got three brothers.
Gary, Keith and Clive.
Thank God he's here. So three brothers who were useless. And obviously, as they were growing up, they kept getting in trouble with the law and various things. So Susan was witnessing this all the time she was growing up. Clive is the worst of the bunch and was involved in some armed robbery in the village, if you remember. He held up the village shop. Susan was obviously heard about this and was absolutely mortified, as you can imagine. Clive was captured or arrested and then escaped and was on the run and turned up at Susan's door. And Susan was in this kind of dilemma, you know, he's my brother, family, but also he's done wrong, what do I do? Anyway, she was persuaded to take him in, help him dye his hair so he could go on the run. I don't know what colour she dyed it, probably orange or something. And the police actually arrested Susan for harbouring a criminal.
Did Neil know? I can't remember.
Neil did know, I think. Yes, he did know. Okay. Yes. So there was this whole storyline of Susan having been arrested for harbouring a criminal, when actually she was torn, and Clive was very threatening. But he was also, you know, her brother, so she was in this really difficult position. So she was sent to prison. Now, that was really interesting. It was a great storyline, and the scripts were fantastic. But I wasn't prepared for how much the media would grab hold of this storyline and run with it. And so suddenly I found myself on the front page of the Telegraph and the Times, you know, about...
It was Free the Ambridge One, wasn't it?
Free the Ambridge One. There was a group of listeners got together and formed this society to free the Ambridge One, and they had badges, and they were in the media talking about it. And it even went to the House of Commons, and Michael Howard
then Home Secretary.
Actually, who was then the Home Secretary, actually spoke about it in the House of Commons. And one of the most interesting things was that, do you remember the programme Kilroy? Yeah. They obviously did these kind of, you know, real world explorations of people's issues and so forth. And they asked me to go on the programme with real women who'd been in prison to talk about Susan's experience in prison. You know, reality and fantasy blurring completely, which I refused to do because I thought, you know, this is the Archers. This is a storyline. I am an actor. I have no place to be on national television talking about the real experiences of some women who have been unfortunate to be in prison. So, yeah, it was a crazy, crazy time, but lots of fun. And people still talk about it now.
Did you know it was... Did you suspect it might have that?
No, it caught us by surprise completely.
Really?
You know, we thought we hoped to draw attention to this issue of, you know, of women with children being sent to prison, you know, arguably in, you know, where's the public good in doing that. We had no idea it was going to be so huge, you know. And frankly, if we'd sat down and said, right, we're going to do this thing that's going to be huge, it probably wouldn't have been, you know. It's better...
Well, I don't know. You sat down with Rob and Helen and that got...
Well, again, you know, we wanted to explore the issues, and they're very real issues, and they're very real to many, many people. Mm. We had no idea that was going to be the massive coastal area that it turned out to be. We're very pleased it was, you know. But, yeah, you know, we You can't think about that when you're doing the story. You know, you just have to tell the story that's true to the character.
Yeah, otherwise you end up with the neighbours scenario. Yeah. And every time it got boring, they just flew a plane. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the worst approach would be, you know, here's an issue, what character can we attach it to?
Yeah.
You know, that's not the way to do drama.
And that's the organic way, isn't it, of the programme and of drama, particularly radio drama, that it enables... I mean, I know that Kerry will probably agree with this, that... What he's just said, you know, you put a storyline out and then you see where it goes, you hear what the listeners are saying, and particularly today, you know, we can look on social media and see where what storylines people are particularly liking or particularly enjoying. And I think that's the lovely evolutionary kind of way of radio drama.
Because we always have a bit of a snigger, sorry, Kerry, about that on Dundee.
Sniggering is your job.
It is. Paid sniggerer. Unpaid snigger, actually, where you don't even get paid. Where we have these storylines that are so slow burn, they're like a, you know, a cassoulet or something. They're just, and you think, where is this going? And you're trying to imagine, okay, what might so. When this child is 16, oh, God, that might happen, you know.
We're literally,
there's no other soap where that happens.
We had a long-term planning meeting just about, was it last week? Gosh, time flies in the Archers. And we literally, at one point, somebody was saying, so in 18 years' time...
Oh, goodness.
You know, on what other show do you have an 18-year planning horizon? None.
So how do you balance, how do the scriptwriters balance the fact that a lot of us listeners don't want any drama, we just want characters? And I'm definitely one of those. Mm. I think the drama gets in the way. You know,
you just want the flower and produce show.
Well, I can do with, that's one bit of drama I can do without the flower and produce show. But how do you balance strategically and then, you know, on a practical level, the need for drama and then with just character stuff?
Yeah, there's no formula. It's entirely instinct, really, you know. What happens once it boils down to the stage where you're looking at... One writer is looking at the week they're going to write. Then it's only really at that sort of point that you get a true feeling for how that is going to balance out. You know, is it all a bit kind of, is there a bit too much going on or whatever? And it's part of our job is to decide what we will emphasise and, you know, what we will treat in a lighter way and so on. But there is no, you know, there is no, as a magic formula to it. It's just instinct. And the feeling over time of what works for the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, quite a long time ago now, I remember there was a period, probably a month or 3 months, something like that, where almost by accident we had three massive stories all on at full pitch.
Colliding.
And they had to be doing that. Each individual story, it had its an inevitability. But they were all happening together, but it was too late at that point. Once when we realised, you know, it was a long time ago, and hopefully we we're aware of that and we try not to let that sort of thing happen again. But yeah, it's, you know, often it's amazing how often people say, I like those scenes where not very much happens. Yes. Which in yeah. a... Which
well,
in...
for all of us, too yeah. much happens yeah. for yeah. all of us. We're all yeah. trying to deal with too much. So yeah. to listen to 12 minutes where yeah. not yeah. a lot happens which is in, lovely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like which, meditation.
Which in most drama, you know, you that would be... You'd be breaking the rules if
Killing
you did
Eve.
That.
Nothing
you know,
happens.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you yeah. each character should go on a journey. They yeah. should be in a no. different place yeah. at the end of the scene than yeah. where they are at the start of the scene. But because of the nature of the Archers, yes, of course, there'll be scenes like that within an episode, but it's fine to have Joe and Eddie mithering about the cider yes. club.
Cool.
As long as it's in an entertaining
yeah.
way.
And I mean, that's why the Archers is so successful. Yeah. Those moments, those small bits of what you would say were kind of meaningless scenes, you know, those things where Susan's stirring a pot of kefir or you know, putting some vegetables on the stove. I mean, those are that's why the Archers is successful as it is.
Have you just let something out the bag, R. Kerry? You know, when you said in 18 Whoops. Years' time, was that obviously been
Pits,
Rosie?
Baby. Look at his face.
I can't say. It could have been they buried a time capsule, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question that you might not be able to answer?
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
Okay. If you could cancel out one storyline, if you could say, I wish I'd never done that storyline, we could have done without that.
Regret, I have a feeling.
Yeah. You see, that's a tricky one because...
I know it's like Doctor Who.
So
you can't go back
working,
and change the
yeah,
thing.
No,
I'm
so busy working on... I mean, I'm right. I literally just yesterday I wrote New Year's Eve.
What happens?
The bells ring at 12 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's hard for me now to look back. You just kind of, you know.
It's like life.
It's happened,
you know.
It's gone, you know, I move on. I'll ask another question and I'll have a think. I'll come back to
okay.
you.
I'd like to ask you.
Yes.
Where would you like to see Susan in 10 years' time?
Okay, where would I like to see her? Well, I'd like to see a middle-aged working-class woman be...
She'd kill you if she heard you describe her as working-class.
But I would like to see her being visible in her later years. I think what happens generally in society that women hit a particular point, and I don't know whether you agree with this, and then they tend to become invisible, or they tend to be seen as having no more potential for things. And I know this happens for men, but I'm talking from a woman's perspective. So for Susan, and perhaps Clary as well, I'd like to see her develop in some way, shape or form, either to have some incredible hobby that she takes up. I've always thought that Susan might be very good at belly dancing, actually. So I'd quite like to see, you know, Emma getting some, rather than karate classes, some belly dancing classes. But yeah, to develop as a woman and have storylines for her... Mm. that aren't necessarily about her marriage or her role as a mother...
Because at the moment, she's really enjoying Emma being a parish councillor.
She's loving that.
But you think that's because she's frustrated.
Yeah.
She should be doing it. But
she'd
then she'd
love
bend
to.
The rules left, right and centre, wouldn't she?
Hello, everyone.
But, yeah, no, I'd like to see her just grow as a woman. Yeah. So I haven't got any particular direction. And I know the scriptwriters write Susan to a T. I mean, I love what they write for me. But, yeah, I think to keep visible... And I think probably if she continues to gossip the way she is, she'll always be visible. So.
Audible. So.
Well, audible, yes.
There is a lot of Victoria Wood in the Susan Carter writing.
Yes.
The whole tabard.
Absolutely.
Thing,
but you see, if I had my way, I would have played all the Julie Walters characters in every Victoria Wood sketch, you know, especially to Sue. So I'd quite like to have done that. But, yeah, no, I love all that. And, you know, she was a genius. And sadly came into the studio, didn't she? I wasn't there.
Did you meet her?
Yeah.
No, she wrote her. I think she wrote an episode.
Yes, she wrote just for comic relief.
Yeah.
She wrote some Archer's scenes, yeah. So, not ones that went on air, but...
No,
yeah.
Stunning. Yeah, amazing.
I do think Susan would make such a better job of running Bridge Farm than that
lot of course. Of course.
She doesn't fanny around doing business plans and saying, you must read this, Helen. Helen, read this, and then I'll give it to Dad, and Dad, read this, and I'll give it to Mum. She just gets... She just
she's
says,
instinctual,
I've had a little marketing
yes.
plan, and I've done this, and then we're going to do that. And then off they go. She was the one who figured out the cafe and the little bottles.
Yeah, I think she's got a really good business brain. I really do. I really do.
But she doesn't think she has.
No.
She says, oh, I can't do it.
But
anything.
She just needs the opportunity. She thought cafe would do it.
Do you know, I'm drinking that now. Oh, yeah. It's revolting. Does anyone else have it?
It is disgusting.
I tried it and the results were not good, I can tell you.
Did you have
by the way, I don't put that in the chilli. Oh,
so, kind of looking at the character of Susan as an example, Kerry... obviously, you've let it out, the cat out of the bag, that in 18 years' time...
Something happens.
Something's going to happen. But for an established character like Susan, how far in the future would you actually have meaningful plans for? Yeah.
So at this long-term meeting that we're talking about, we're looking... it's slightly different at the moment because we've just changed editor. Mm-hmm. So we're... In the long-term meeting, we're planning a little bit more short-term than normal because, you know, there's a need to fill in next year, you know, which was perhaps only pretty sketchy, really, inevitably, just because we'd had a fairly sudden change of editor with Hugh Kinnear-Jones going. And now, you know, thank goodness we're in a more stable situation with our new editor, Jeremy Howe. But normally, it's sort of... 1, 2, 3 years ahead. That's our kind of long-term planning horizon. Mm-hmm. And then we have our five weekly meetings where we're looking about 3 months ahead, and that's where we get into the detail of what's happening.
It must be very, very... So say it's a bit like a sat-nav where you have your ultimate direction. Mm-hmm. So say in 3 years' time you know that A is going to get married to B.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be together forever. Mm. The temptation to start... dropping little hints about that already must be immense, but then you know that you can't because you're giving too much away and everyone will go, oh, well, it's obvious you're going to get...
Yeah.
Which explains all the red herrings, I suppose, when we all go, ooh, did you hear so-and-so? That definitely means something, and Kerry's just going, oh, la, la, because it absolutely doesn't.
It's exactly that. You know, the you want to put twists and turns in, and ideally you don't want it to be so predictable that the listener could write the script themselves, although they do anyway. but it is a little bit like Nostradamus, who came up with a mass of predictions.
Yeah, some of
them.
Thousands
of them. And one or two actually kind of seemed to match what really happened. They're the ones that people remember. They're the ones where they say, I knew those two were going to get together.
Yeah.
And they forget all the times when everybody else was saying, no, they're going to be with them, and they're going to be with them, and this sort of thing. So hopefully it should be satisfying. But believable, of course. You never want, oh, that's completely unrealistic. Mm. It should always be possible. Not necessarily probable, but possible.
I want to ask an icky question now that maybe seems a bit bad taste, but it is, I think it's valid. Quite a few of the characters in The Archers are knocking on, I think it's safe to say. How do you deal with... I know, like, Nick is with a young woman who had sepsis and died and everything, but how do you deal? Is it like the royal family where you sort of have a contingency plan if... Not a great actor. Yeah. I'm not making a very good fist at this.
The answer is no, because you don't know, you know, who's going to fall off the perch, when, what storylines they'll have at the time.
But do older actors ever say, I don't want to die on the... I don't want my character to die?
Yes. What most of them don't want, though, is for someone else to take it on after they die.
Yeah.
You know, they'd rather the character would die. And frankly, if we're talking about our... older generation of actors, you know, I mean, we're not going to recast Jill.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No.
Or Joe Grundy.
That would be,
Joe Grundy's 97, you know.
Yeah.
That would be complete folly, you know, and an insult, frankly, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just don't know. You just
well,
don't
Peggy's
know.
So never you, going to die, is you, she? Peggy is bionic.
Absolutely, yes. She's going to act with us all.
Carry on.
So you just have to respond... when the time comes, you know, and depending on, you know, it might be that they're in a bit of a quiet patch, as happens with Archer's characters, and you know, it's easy. It might be they've got a massive story running, And so then you've got to talk to the family and say, look, would you be okay for, you know, for a few months for what's been recorded already by nearest and dearest, you know, to go out on air. And so, you know, they so far have always been absolutely delighted.
I don't think there is another soap that has actors of...
Not in their 90s, no. Absolutely.
And they're amazing. Yeah. Peggy's sounding younger by the
way. She looks younger.
About
she looks
she's
fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah. She looks incredible.
Yeah. I always think of her like the Queen Mother.
Yeah.
I always think she looks like the Queen Mother. Mm. I don't even know what she looks like.
And it's a, you know, they're a cracking example to us all. You know, don't retire, keep working.
No, absolutely.
Can I petition you, Mr. Davis, to bring back a character which I didn't realise I actually quite liked, but Kathy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she's mentioned, and that's what I don't quite understand. If she's mentioned, you know, that she's working in the health club. You know, and we talked. I know we talked about chemistry before in terms of people that are in a loving relationship, like Alison and Shula, that they didn't really have any kind of chemistry, and Susan and Neil have excellent on air chemistry. But Janie and Kathy were just hitting their stride. Mm. It was really getting good.
Yeah,
I mean, so, I'm not going to allow you to leave the town hall until you say categorically. That Kathy can come back.
I know what's happened to her. She went into the Turkish bars and the door locked, and she's still in there. So when they eventually open the door, she's going to come out looking fantastic.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's not in my gift. I'm but a humble writer. It's the editor that you need to be talking to. You know, it's the editor.
Get him on the phone, Roy.
But I believe in representative democracy, so I'm giving you the power to go into that script meeting and say, let's have a bit of Kathy back.
If only the Archers worked that way.
One way in which the Archers does work is that it's a reflection of wider society. Bearing in mind it's a rural soap, right? So you can't, dare I say, you're not going to have an Indian corner shop. And whatever, right? But we do have, we've had black characters, Asian characters, obviously with Anisha, and it's a question from Mary Ellis, and she says there's a complete imbalance. There's lots of gay men, no lesbians, and then when there was last year, the stories weren't developed. So how do you respond to Mary's question?
Yeah, it's a fair point. It's obviously something we. You know, we consider and we talk about. You don't want to bring a character in, you know, with a capital L on.
Hello, I'm a lesbian.
Exactly. You know, that needs to be part of who they are. We have now established Anna. She's we've cast a very good actor to play her.
So she might be back then.
There's, you know, this is again. It's very much in the gift of the incoming editor. But certainly now that. You know, she exists. She has connections to the village.
Yeah.
You know, she certainly could. You know, there are all manner of ways in which you know she may return. I'm not saying she's going to. I'm not saying she's not going to. But yeah, it's something we're alive to. Mm.
And have we got anyone else? Because we've had Eleanor Bron, and Alison Steadman.
Mm-hmm.
So have we got Judy Dench lined up? Or, you know, we're going to have Nicole Kidman and you're going to walk into the shop?
George Clooney?
Yeah. That'd
be all right, wouldn't it?
We try and avoid stunt casting, if you know the name.
What?
But oddly enough, Jeremy, our new editor, was saying, I have to be careful about whose names I mention here, was a very well-known... veteran British actress was talking to him at some drama event or other and said she'd really like a part
that
in the
is,
Archers.
Judy Dench has already been on, though, hasn't she?
Yes, she played one line from Prue Forrest, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a part currently non-speaking who would be perfect for this particular actor... and I can't say any more. It was just
you
one of those things.
You don't need to. We'll all guess, absolutely. And then we'll tweet it.
It was just one of those things where it came and thought, oh, that would be great. But now, you know, it's a case of would we want to do it? you know, do we want that character to speak?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so on. But, yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the panoply of British acting talent would probably, you know, like a go in the Archers once in a while.
Of course, yeah. He wouldn't.
Talking about talent in British acting, we're going to have a brief little sojourn right now because there's a bit of a blast from the past, at least a voice from the past anyway.
Hello everyone, it's Becky Wright here. I just wanted to drop in and say a big, big thank you to everybody that sponsored Sarah and I on our 50k. We completed the course in 12 hours and 12 minutes. Kind of surprised us both, and have raised nearly £4,200 for the UK Sepsis Trust. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We couldn't have done it without you. And also the page was in the top 1% of Just Giving fundraising pages for September, and we couldn't have done it without you. So I just wanted to drop in today and send my sincere thanks and love to you all. I hope you have an amazing day. And also, my page is still open for another few weeks. If you can spare a few pounds, that would be amazing. Anyway, I'd just like to sign off by saying thank you for 11 years and RIP Nick Grundy.
Aww. You couldn't really bring her back, could you?
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You made a terrible mistake.
The ghost, the ghost of Nick. Yeah, I'm Nick's unknown twin sister. Yeah, no, it's not very hard.
Well, Nigel came back, didn't he? To a fashion. Sorry, the character that played him.
What?
The actor that played him, sorry.
Came back when?
He was
He was a jury member.
He was a jury member.
He was.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I've forgotten that.
Well remembered.
So there is precedent for this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
On that
and
note,
David heard bits of Phil when he was fiddling around with his silly old toy farm.
But, yeah.
Yes, but that was course, a record. That was, yeah.
Yes, right. No, I know.
That
I didn't
would
mean
have, that, no, yeah, that no, would that, have been impressive. I've written this new stuff for Phil. Norman, are you there?
Tap one. Yeah,
have we just about exhausted
I think
questions
we have.
To these
I'm
pair?
Just about exhausted.
Yeah, I've done. Me too. Mm. I think what we should do at this point is maybe go and have a bit of a camp coffee break, mm-hmm. right? Which means at this point we can get our yokel bit up to give us a social media roundup.
You give applause, right? You're going to go all the way around.
Now, just whilst Mark gets on stage, for the people that don't know, don't listen to the podcast, what we do every week is we look at what people have posted on our Facebook group, and either Yokel Bear
keep filling,
or Millie Bell, who is a contributor who lives in Australia. They basically kind of deliver that to us, and they tell us all the things which people have been doing and saying about the Archers.
Is and he gone next door?
He's got lost. He's gone by a
pen. The handle's turning.
So let's give Mark another round of applause.
Thanks. Oh.
Hello. Sorry, they had to take me around the back. So it's I, Yokel Bear, on the Twitters, who does the social media roundup for Dumpty Dum. And also, I send big love from Witherspoon and Millie Bell, our social media people that we love from America and down under. So it's been a really busy week on social media this week. But one thing we did is we knew that Charlotte was going to be here. We asked people to sum up Susan Carter. And I will pick out the one that I thought was either the funniest or the one that really summed it up. And Nicole Bate posted simply this. Bowl of chilli, anyone? We also had a bit of an open thread on our Facebook page where we asked people to air anything that they wanted at all. Plot predictions, conspiracy theories, personal hobby horses, and maybe questions for the panel. Missy Purple Pumpkin, I really hope that's your real name, said, I'd love to know if there is anyone whose job it is to deal with the dangling storylines. And pointed out, like, you know, with Roy and Lexi. Roy, you know, Lexi's gone away, but Roy never gets a mention. It's like he winks out of existence. And Missy Purple Pumpkin went on to say, there's a lot dangling these days. Yes, you're absolutely right, Missy. Big danglers at the moment. Emma Jones said, why hasn't anyone called out Fallon for her hypocrisy? Because when Harrison arrested her dad, she went spare. Fiona Sexton said, where is David? He's the self-appointed head of Clan Archer, but doesn't seem to be doing anything for Lizzie. Now, Fiona posted that at the beginning of the week. Well, Fiona, by the end, he'd driven all the way to a prison and sat outside it. Doesn't really make him the Tony Soprano of Ambridge. But our very own Witherspoon asked, why don't the men of Ambridge have any academic aspirations? Is there something in the water that affects all males that drink it? Should we be blaming Brian? Well, I tell you what, Witherspoon, we drank the water and we got dumberer. But I think Sasha Manish, who, incidentally, Sasha Manish was the winner of last week's Dumpty Dum contest of Guess Freddy's Sentence. She got it dead on with 2 years. I think Sasha this week spoke for the whole Archers Nation with just 3 words. Still hate Hannah. And in fact, Sasha posted that about God knows how many times on the Facebook page, saying, I'm just going to keep posting this until everyone agrees with it. But talking of Hannah, or as Bid Harrison referred to her in a post this week, the Hannah House of Horror. Yeah, we got talking about Hannah. Now, Leonie Beavers thought, oh, what a loathsome woman. But Tessa Herring wondered whether Hannah's a bit more nuanced. Is she an updated Kirsty? Is she free-willed, strong, but a bit reactionary sometimes? But Fusty Gusset, I really hope that's your real name. Fusty Gusset said, she's here to shoot all of our sacred cows. Oh, God, not Tony's cows. We'll never hear the last of it from Our Lady of the Substandard Cheese. But Hannah is 50% of the reason that we that ended up with running our most popular Facebook poll ever. Because this week, I think it's been pointed out, is you couldn't move for just tuning in and finding Sausage Boy hiding the, well, sausage. So we asked the question, should there be fewer scenes with Tom and Hannah getting jiggy with it, as I believe the kids call it these days? Well, the results are in. This is the people's vote. 79% said, God, please, can we have less sex scenes with them? Whereas a rather suspect and depraved 21% said they wanted more sex scenes. But, as Royfield's already said, we like representative democracy at Dumpty Dum. So I'm going to announce it here. Right now, we're holding a second referendum. If you think that there should be less Tom and Hannah sex, make some noise now. If for some dodgy reason you think that there should be more sex, make some noise now.
sides. All that side.
I think there you go. It's the will of the people, Kerry.
I hear you.
Less sex, please. We're Archer's listeners. But after feeling all shuddery, thinking about Sausage Boy and his sausage, we did have one thread this week, which I think is worth... We're going to finish on a nice note. We had a Johnny appreciation thread. And by Johnny, I mean, you know, the character. Megan Eliza Stott said, "I actually love him," and then put a heart emoji. Andrea Melling said, "He's the salt of the earth." Hold on, sorry, I've got to turn the page. Joe Harmer said, "He's the only light at the end of the polytunnel." And Jennifer Preston said, "In tribute to the great Lucy, isn't breathing brilliant?" And with that, we've reached the end of the social media roundup. So it's goodbye from me, Yokel Bear. Next week, you have the pleasure of Millie Bell for another great week on our social media. As Johnny would say, brilliant!
Would you like to hit us with some tweets of the last 7 days, Freeman?
I will. Buggy Swires. Jill. "But what if Freddie had stayed at the cathedral school? He'd have got a higher profit margin, probably." Jam Spangle said, "Hannah's Guide to the Subtle Art of Seduction 101. Lesson 1. Shout in a loud voice, 'Away you go, sausage boy, I'll tell you when to stop.'" Ambridge Pony Club, a very thoughtful one here.
Yes.
"Perhaps Jill's evasion of proper justice post Flapjack Gate gave Freddie a false sense of being above the law." Mark B. "In Ambridge terms, Freddie will miss Stir Up Sunday in the Panto, but he will be out for the single wicket. It's a mixed bag." And my favourite tweet of the week is from the Archers Undramatic. "That horrific moment when Freddie is led into his cell to be greeted from the top bunk with, 'Hello, Puska.'"
Very good. Very good.
Blooming hell, we're some clever archers.
I know. If you ever want a week off, we'll just write them.
Well, should we just start to round things up now, then?
I think we should.
I'm spent. So, dumdydum.com, folks, go there. We've got a shop. There's awesome things you can do on dumdydum.com.
In fact, Andrew Horn is modelling one of our things.
He is. Oh.
Stand up. Look at that manly chest with the manly words on it.
If you would want a T-shirt like that, what that man is wearing, you can go on to dumdydum.com.
No, I meant Andrew. Andrew's for sale on our shop.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The T-shirt.
Go on to dumdydum.com, maybe join the forum, maybe just go and commune with other kind of people who are similarly obsessed with our passion, the Archers. dumdydum.com. Remember, folks, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe. You can simply go onto our website and hit the SpeakPipe app, or you can call us on 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message from an ordinary phone. On the Twitters, we have Dion. Down to the Twitter's bit.
Oh, no, sorry.
All right. So, if you want to find us on Twitter, you can find me where I'm at Royfield, and, of course, we are at Dumdydum. And you, Lucy, can be found...
at Lucy V. Freeman.
And how about you, Mr. Kerry Davis?
I'm at Kerry Davis, K-E-R-I-D-A-V-I-E-S, the Welsh way.
Charlotte?
I'm at Ambridge View, of course.
And of course, we don't just have a presence on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook. And if you go onto Facebook, maybe Millie Bell or Yokel Bear or Witherspoon will read out one of your messages or missives, and you'll get onto the show that way. Now, that's just about it, really, isn't it? Have you enjoyed being in Birmingham?
I've loved it, actually.
What's been your best bit?
The most worrying bit was wondering how the hell I was supposed to get into the town hall, because the entire thing had been blown up around it, as far as I could tell. It was like the Blitz.
And you saw the little greeting the town hall gave us
outside the stage door. Yeah, that was really nice. Yep, yes, and also the man playing that piano with by hitting
it. Oh yes, I saw him.
Gosh. He's been playing the same tune now for 3 hours, just going like this.
I think it's a cymbalom.
Yeah,
is that right?
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
yes.
Wonderful instrument.
Yes.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah. It's very clever.
Yeah,
I wonder if you can play the Archer's theme tune.
Yes, I wondered that. Actually,
for enough money, I'm sure he'd play anything.
If you've never heard of Dum-de-Dum before, please go onto a podcatcher of your choice. It could be iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. But go onto an internet-enabled device, type in Dum-de-Dum, and why don't you become one of our listeners? You know, there's a few of us around the world, and I think one of the lovely things about being part of Dum-de-Dum is that we do have listeners from the four corners of the world, whether it's Witherspoon in New York, Millie Bell in Australia, that contribute kind of every week, or even we had today Andy from Denmark. So be part of our Dum-de-Dum community by simply going onto an internet-enabled device, as I said, and typing in Dum-de-Dum, download our podcast. And if you do that, why don't you write us a review on a podcatcher of choice, but give us 5 stars. We only want 5 stars. All right.
It's also quite reassuring to find out that there are other people that are as bonkers as you are. And you think, not just in this country, everywhere. Yeah.
Exactly. We all love the Archers, don't we? That's the reason why we're here. So let's give a round of applause to our guests, Kerry and Charlotte. Also, just before we go, I've got to thank the 40 to 50 brave, crazy souls that have come from, again, the four corners of the planet to be part of this Dum-de-Dum for Sass Archers weekend. So if you were part of that group, so we did the mailbox tour, we went and had dinner last night, we kind of almost got lost on the canal today trying to find somewhere to go and have lunch.
But we all get lost on the canal, it only goes like that.
There are many options in the Birmingham canal system, believe you. We've got more miles of canals in Birmingham than Venice.
Really?
You can get lost. You can.
Get lost, yeah. But.
And yes, and of course then, the highlight of the whole weekend was seeing Kerry drop some shapes at the Reflex nightclub last night.
He's a good dancer. He's a good dancer.
Very light on your feet, sir.
Thank you. Keeps me off the streets.
Any passing?
No, just thank you all so much for coming, and thank you for ringing in and for doing all the lovely things that you do, because this is what makes it so much fun. And I was very, very nervous about this, but actually it's been lovely, so thank you so much.
And you know what? I think we should maybe do this again next year.
Yay!
That's it. Dum-de-Dum's over.
Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.